We now are going to item nine, information session on retirement process. Tim, do you want to introduce?
Christina or Tim?
Yeah, she can go through an introduction or start it off on what we're doing.
So this is kind of a follow-up from last meeting. We had Brianne come and present the pre-retirement workshop, which is a session that members usually go through towards the end of their career, closer to retirement. And then what we have today is just talking about the process that a member goes through throughout their career getting to retirement. So what you saw last time was a little piece at the end, and then we wanted to kind of take you back to the beginning and go through everything.
And also part of this as well is a discussion about the timeline around folks from when they retire to getting that first check, because there has been a lot of questions about that and why is that and can we shorten that time frame. So we wanted the board to have a good understanding of, you know, who's responsible for what pieces in that process, and also when it comes to the compensation review, what that looks like as well and what we're doing.
So I'm going to let Tim go through it, since it's his group that pretty much handles this.
Okay. We're going to go over, well, I guess it's now this afternoon, is a little bit on the tools and resources that we make available to our applicants, as well as all of our members, the application and calculation process, what could impact it, the reviews that take place, as well as the steps we take to manage the process. And then we'll go through, as Gail mentioned, some of the timeline information, the statistical data. So some steps that can be taken as a member goes into retirement and filing an application. We first have informational sessions that we make available to our members. We'll go out in the field and meet with various departments to go through our program. I'll give a little bit more information on that in a minute. The pre-retirement workshop, which you saw at the last meeting, the retirement estimate process, and one-on-one counseling appointments. The informational sessions are open to all members. They're well attended. We're going to begin running them also on site at SACERA. They provide general information about SACERA, the plan, what a defined benefit plan is, what a defined contribution plan, just general information. We'll also talk about benefit information, how contributions are calculated, vesting, retirement eligibility, benefit calculations, and payment options with them. Depending upon the audience, we'll talk about reciprocity, incoming and outgoing reciprocity, what happens if you leave SACERA and go to a reciprocal agency, as well as we talk about our website and other tools, the resources that they have at their fingertips, how to use the online calculator, plan handbooks, the law book, contribution calculator is all presented to them and demonstrated. Last meeting, you sat through the pre-retirement workshop, and the four main areas that we covered there was eligibility investing, benefit calculations, the benefit option choices, and then final preparation for retirement. Okay, we're going to now step in and start talking about estimates. And when we prepare an estimate, it's almost like going through a pre-retirement, someone working up to retirement. And in a lot of cases, we prepare these for members retiring anywhere from 6 months to 1 year away from retirement. However, we do have a lot of individuals that do outreach to us that want to know where they stand today. They do get an annual benefit statement. However, they want something more detailed to themselves, as well as some potentially various dates. So we'll look at actual pensionable salary, including differentials. We'll look at the MOUs on what is eligible compensation, possible salary increases that are coming up. We'll request from the employer sick leave and vacation accrual information. And then also we'll give the member the opportunity, if they want to project, I'm taking a new position, what would that mean to me? We get a lot of requests from the safety area. If I go from this position to a sergeant to a lieutenant, what What does that mean to me and my retirement benefit? And then for legacy members with on-call or standby, we'll calculate the estimate two ways, one with and one without the differential, so they can see the difference. Okay, last piece that we were going to talk about in this area is the one-on-one counseling appointments. Members can actually come in and request an appointment with a counselor at any time. The preferred time, again, is as they're nearing retirement. But nothing precludes them from scheduling something earlier. During that appointment, the counselor will go through our retirement checklist. And the checklist goes through the key areas are the documents that we need from them to process their retirement. We also have them initial off on various acknowledgments, such as once you apply for retirement, you can't revoke it after your retirement date. You can't apply earlier than 60 days. The final calcs are processed after the employer provides the final information to us. How the monthly benefit is calculated, payment options, and so forth are the acknowledgments. We'll also go through forms. It could be direct deposit, tax forms that are needed, and then optional deductions, which could be CRA, RSG deductions that are optional to them. The average time for each one of the appointments is about an hour. Some take a lot longer, some are a lot shorter. It really varies depending upon the person and the number of questions they have. A lot of these individuals have already gone through the informational sessions or the pre-retirement workshops, and they're prepared. Other individuals have some very specific questions and what-if questions. If they want to make a purchase, what's available to them, and what does it mean to them. Okay, we're going to step now over to the retirement application and calculation process. It's up to the member to submit their retirement application to us and all the necessary paperwork, and for the employer to submit the final active payroll information to us. The steps for the retirement calculation as outlined is the retirement calculation, which the average time for processing the calculation is 8 weeks after the final active payroll information is received. The review validation process and getting the choice election, the option election, I think you've heard us refer to that, is 2 weeks after the calculation is done. And then once the member returns their signed election form to us selecting the payment option they want, on average they go on payroll and receive their first check within a week.
Hey Tim, why does it take 8 weeks for the retirement calculation once you get the final?
And then we're looking here is like, this is on average. There could be reasons that would extend it beyond the 8 weeks. Some are shorter if it's a very clean retirement. A delay could be divorce is pending. It's surprising the number of individuals where the first time we hear about an individual that had a prior marriage, had a prior marriage is when they come in to retire, and you know, maybe they're a little surprised. You mean they get a part of this? As well as a number are in the divorce process at the time. Sometimes there's pay code. We do a full audit, and we'll get into it. We do a full career audit when we're zeroing in and identifying the highest 12-month and 36-month FAS periods. Mm-hmm. We do a full career audit. We're making sure they're getting all of their service credit, all of their contributions have been collected. If contributions are missing or have been missed, we're going to do outreach to collect those contributions and interest so the fund is whole. So a number of reasons in the process, in that processing, as well as it sounds correct, you know, getting a Social Security card. We just had somebody turn in, I'm trying to remember, Monday, I think it was a birth certificate, 2 years for us to get the information. You know, it's
Tim, somebody got divorced 20 years ago, but had 5 years, the spouse had 5 years of marriage during working time with one of our entities, isn't mentioned by the way, probably has a new spouse at this point. The original one isn't mentioned, no quadro. How do we confirm, how do we determine whether or not there might be another claimant against a piece of the retirement benefit?
A lot of times the information comes up when we'll look at the enrollment, we look at the enrollment cards, and you'll see, sometimes you'll see somebody enrolled and they name their mother or father as their beneficiary, they get married, they name their spouse. At some point, they change.
We review our own records. We ask them to confirm that presumably this is their only spouse or they don't have a spouse.
Right, correct. It's one of the acknowledgments.
Have we had any occasions where sometime after the benefit is in place and in payment status, somebody comes back and says, well, part of that's mine?
I mean, I'm going to answer. I mean, Karen may have more history on it than I do. I mean, for the period of time that I've been here, we haven't come across where we were paying somebody erroneously, knowing, you know, that without knowing about a divorce. I mean, there are, I mean, as the divorce, just, I mean, it can be no ownership to depending upon.
Well, what we're doing reasonably is covered our.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also, we can have where originally they put their former spouse, and then now they go to retire, and they're like, "Okay, yeah, we need this," you know, and it's like, "Wait a minute, no, I have that was two wives ago. What do you mean?" You know, so that's part of it. But yeah. And it's in here. But can you just touch real quick on the monthly payroll and the timeline of when it gets reported as? Because that's a big piece in the. And that time frame as well.
As far as the processing
from when,
of the pay-
from when their active payroll hits and then when it gets reported.
Oh, yeah.
To and us
we're well,
cause
yeah.
That's part of the delay as well.
Yeah, and that is that is a big delay that we do have a slide on.
So, with an average of 2 months to get that worked out, situations can really skew that. So, let's say someone, everything is really clean. And for someone who's got everything in and it's a simple process, are we still talking 8 weeks or is it usually more like 2 weeks? Or
it can be shorter and we'll touch on that also.
Okay, a question that I wanted to raise with that because we're looking at an overall period of, in on average of 3 months for someone to get their pension check and which brought up the discussion of kind of like an automatic payment in the interim. But is there any counseling provided to the individual that, by the way, you're retiring, but it may take some time for you to get a pension check, you should talk to a financial advisor or whatever, how are you going to bridge that gap kind of thing?
It's actually on our checklist on an acknowledgement that they initial that it has been communicated to them and they're aware of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's just a big move. No money for a few months.
Yeah, it's, and a lot of it is just getting the information and the questions that come up on the information and the full scope of the review that takes place.
Yeah. Okay.
Timing wise. Make sure we're on the right screen. The retirement calculation, the process begins once the final active paycheck is received from the employer. And if you look, if we just jump ahead to slide 14, you'll see that in the most case, and we're going to talk about the county, they process payroll only once a month. And we get that information normally, or it's available to us, or we can access it from the PeopleSoft system on the 10th of the following month. So, for example, someone that ends employment or retires as of March 6th or March 16th, it can even be March 31st, that payroll data may not be available to us until April 10th, and that's when their final paycheck is being processed. And sometimes, as noted on 14, depending upon what the employer knows, that March 31st retirement date. We may not have the information until May 10th.
Wow.
And it's just how their payroll process is and what, and us getting that information. And they can't provide it to us until they process that information. And as I previously mentioned, we do a full review of the member's career to gather that information. And in a lot of cases, we also have to calculate a 12-month and 36-month final average salary depending upon what tiers they're in. If they're in tiers 2 and 3, we've got to do two different calculations. And it's possible that, the periods, the 12-month period, may or may not be part of this 36-month period. To do the calculation, and what, you know, one of, you know, we're talking about, you know, 8 weeks and the amount of time, is each calculation is manually calculated. The information is pulled from various systems, it's checked, and then we have to go through a manual calculation to determine the right figure or right monthly benefit. If the information is then passed on to a supervisor, who validates and reviews the information for accuracy. Once it is verified, it will be then put into the CPAS system. And the only core pieces of data, such as service tier, final average salary, go into the CPAS system, and it does a calculation of the benefit. And then we'll do the payment option election form on an individual system or an individual tool that is then cross-checked back to CPAS. In a lot of cases, based upon the information in the tools, the information matches. In some cases, there are some differences, and then we have to reconcile the correct calculation and what's drawing which portion off.
Tim, I assume there's a calculation worksheet with lots of blanks that we go through in the manual calculation. In other words, you don't start with a blank piece of paper. You have a series of steps that they
Showed us that the last time.
The estimate work. Everyone that goes through the retirement process and the final retirement calculation, where you saw that estimate worksheet at the February 13th meeting, each person has a calculation similar to that performed.
Okay.
And so it's a it's a good audit trail, as well as it's cross-checked to prior estimates. Calculations done, the worksheet, the option elections available. Normally, we'll sit down one-on-one again with the retiree, go through their final calculation, how it was determined, provide them with their payment choices. It's a personal choice for them to make their selection of which payment option they want. I think if you look at the board items, the consent items, you'll normally see at the beginning of the month, a majority of our retirees take the unmodified option. However, we do have a number that takes some of the other options. The signed form comes back to SACERA, back to the office, and the individual then is put on the next payroll cycle. We run two off-cycle payrolls, or here we have initial pension checks. We run them twice a month, normally on the 10th and the 20th, and that's for new people going on to payroll. And then we run main payroll, or the monthly payroll that's paid at the first of the month right after the 20th. And they have, if the person's local or nearby, they do have the option, if they would like to come pick their check up, to come and pick the check up. What can affect the timing of the initial pension check? I mean, the first is the member. I mean, the member is responsible for getting us the documents we need. I mean, some of the simple information, like I said, we talk about divorce and they're very complicated and the timing of it. But sometimes it's really social security cards, birth certificates, merit certificates that they have a challenge on providing to us. And in some cases, it's they get their choice election, the retirement choice election form, and they don't return it. And so we keep prodding them along, you know, if we haven't received it, just in case, you know, it was mailed back to us and lost. Fortunately, a majority of these, the individuals sign them in our office, and we have them right away. Second is the employer, on the employer side, and that is SACERA getting and having access to the final active payroll information. Another piece of that as we do our audit is we go through all of their pay codes, and there are some pay codes that come up that do raise some questions that research has to take place, and we have to be back in contact with the employer. I think in one of the audits, I'm going to say Raleigh probably would remember, in the last 6 months where they were using the adjustment pay code as kind of a catch-all code, and you know, we need to determine is it pensionable compensation or not for them. We also have in some cases reciprocal agencies and getting information from them. The person may have retired from SACERA, they may have retired from the reciprocal agency, and the response, we're not getting a response that allows SACERA to do the final calculation for them. And then lastly, we have, you know, what SACERA is responsible for. It's completing the calculation. It's researching the pay codes. It's completing the retirement payment choice for the member to actually make the election. And then getting them onto our payroll system. And I think on the member responsibility, we've talked a lot about the documents and the importance of that. You know, even if we're talking about advancing payments, if we're missing documents and the payment option, a lot of our payment options are driven by who their beneficiary is. And it's based, you know, built into the calculations. Without that information, we cannot calculate the other options. The unmodified option, it's not required. And on the option one, which is the annuity option, it's not required. But on other options, we need to know who the beneficiary is for them to make the election and for us to do the calculation. And I think on this screen, we already talked about the timing of getting the information and reinforced that, you know, when the payroll data contains pay codes that require additional research, you know, that is an pretty time consuming, not just for SACERA, but it's going back to the employer and asking them, and it may be a new payroll person, and they need to research exactly what caused this pay code, what it was for, and the purpose of it, and it may be tying it back to an MOU, so we can make a determination on pensionability of it. Okay, what can SACERA do for the timing, you know, that affects the timing of the initial pension check? Well, an increase in the number of retirement applications that come in have a direct impact. From 2017 to 2018, we saw over a 20% increase in retirement applications that have come in. So far this year, I mean, we're only talking now less than 2 months. We're running 15% higher than we were a year ago. Now, will that continue? Again, it's too short of a period to make that determination. And again, the retirement calculations, this is a manual process. It's a manual validation process. We want to make sure what we're putting into the system and what we're paying is right. And so it takes multiple eyes to go through it and check the information. And then lastly, it's the reciprocal agencies. In some cases, some of the agencies are fast, some are on the slower side on getting information and response time. It may be that they have something else going on their side. You know, it could be a system conversion and resources aren't there to get this information to us, but we do a lot of outreach to get that information. Okay. Also, as part of the process, we go through, we take into consideration the policy on determining compensation earnable under Assembly Bill 197 for the purposes of calculating retirement benefits for legacy pre-PEPRA members. And so we'll go through and look at the forms of compensation. You know, what the policy has is compensation earnable does not include payments for additional services rendered outside of working hours. Pay codes must meet the following requirements. And so we go through, you know, first, it must be worked during normal working hours as set out by the employment agreement, the MOU. It must be required by the employer to be worked by the employee, and it must be worked by all others in the same classification. That is evaluated whenever we have a pay code that comes up that fits this criteria. We go through a review process to capture that information and make a determination. We'll also look at vacation. Under that same policy, we're looking at vacation, the vacation pay buyback reviews, and ensuring that the vacation information, vacation sale information that is reported to us is correct. It's not being over-reported, so we're pulling back information, looking at the MOUs and what is the provisions are in the MOU. In a lot of cases, we're looking also for where the employer didn't allow the or did not process a vacation sale for the individual, and they were eligible to have a vacation sale. And we'll also look at the leave cash outs under the estoppel class. And this impacts members before December 31, 2012, where the employer allowed during employment a cash out of unused leave time in amounts in excess of the amount of leave time earned in the FAS periods. We don't have a lot of these. But when we do, it's a very lengthy process. We usually pull everything together, and due to the complexity, all also rely on our legal in-house legal resources. And then lastly, we'll look at compensation enhancements. Last year, we did come to the board with a compensation enhancement that was identified. And that's a case where an individual the individual converted healthcare benefits to cash. So it was cash in lieu of benefits. It was a new benefit that was started, and the member made an election partway into that process to take the cash because his spouse had benefits from another resource that were better and less expensive. And so the board made a determination, but we'll go through and look for anything out of the ordinary. We look for consistency. You know, if someone has a differential, there's a consistency with the differential. We're not looking at the point of end of employment where you see it trending upward or spiking. And we'll also look at others in the same class to see or how much of that differential are they receiving. And this is all per the board's policy. The steps we're taking to shorten the process is we're encouraging our members, got too far ahead, you want getting to your part, we're encouraging our members to provide their documentation to us earlier. So we have it when they come in already. You know, we talk about it at the workshops we put on. We put it in newsletters, handbooks, the website, it's in in-person counseling appointments, anywhere we can. Because we can accept it at any time, the information is retained in our system, so we know we have it. As well as information to the participating employers about educating them about pay reporting and the retirement process. Our member services group has had meetings with our employers going through not just the contribution process, but also the process about the reporting and the retirement process for us. There's a handbook for that. There's information on our website. And then during our meetings, whether it's a phone call or a file review, communicating with the members, you know, what is missing? In a lot of cases, they'll think, well, I already gave you that Social Security card or that birth certificate. They may have four beneficiaries, and they're confusing the beneficiaries. And we need to, again, have that information and just being very clear, this is exactly what we need to have to proceed and documenting it with them. And then we're cross-training staff for additional quality assurance reviewers, so we have more resources that can do final reviews as well as do the calculations, hopefully to go shorten the 8-week average. And then when additional research is needed for particular pay codes, is processing, doing the retirement calculation, processing the retirement, getting them on payroll without, say, for example, the differential until a final determination is made. That way, they're not waiting for their full benefit or the adjusted benefit if it is determined it was includable.
And one other item to note on this is last year we did start having information sessions at some of our employers, so folks who were more than 5 years away from retirement could get that additional information so they could start to turn in documents sooner and that kind of thing. And this year we're starting to have them on site in addition to the pre-retirement workshops, which were kind of the only session that we had for members prior to last year.
So the statistical information, the average retirement estimates that are completed each year is about 1,850. And it doesn't mean that we have 1,850 members requesting estimates. Some members request multiple estimates. And sometimes the members will come in and want to sit down with a counselor and go through the estimate and have reviews. So there's a lot of communication and touch points there, even with estimates. The average service retirements processed each year is around 360, and almost 100% of those retirements have one-on-one appointments with a counselor to go through what the options are and what is included in that retirement calculation, as well as what their options are for payment. We put together for 2018 how many calendar days the average retirement processing time was. So we found that on average we're looking at about 66 calendar days to process a retirement from the point of getting the information from the employer. So this doesn't include any information we might be missing from the member, but once we get that final payroll check, we're trying to start the calculation even if we don't have all of the legal docs, and then we're working another path of trying to make sure we get those docs. The shortest we've had is 20 calendar days to process that, and then the most has been about 194. So a lot of what we see in the 194 days could be difficult pay code reviews, divorces. We have had members that file for divorce at the same time they file for retirement, and so then that delays it because we have to wait for the courts to finalize the divorce before we can do anything. Once the member makes the choice of payment, then it's just a matter of us getting them onto payroll, and on average we're looking at about 5 calendar days to get them onto payroll, so we're pretty quick there once they make that choice and return it to us. We're the shortest is 1 day, so if they happen to turn them in right before we're processing payroll, we could get a check out to them pretty quick, and if they come and pick it up, it's really quick for them. The most it would take is 24 days, depending on where they turn it in within those payroll cycles that Tim mentioned.
Would it be possible to maybe indicate how many fall into each category? Otherwise, it looks like you've got an 30% chance of having 200 days.
How many applications are in
each? I just wondered how many fall into each category, because it might be nice to know that 75% of them were in the short end as opposed to one-third of them being 200 days.
Yeah, I mean, the minimum and maximum are one person. The average takes everybody together.
So the one person was 194. The average is 66, so that's population.
So you're looking at the distribution of, or 98% of them the average and 2% outliers, or
just a thought.
So you're looking at that.
Otherwise it looks as if that you could just as easily get a 30% chance of falling into 200 days.
Even though it was one person.
Those are the two extreme outliers, right? The 20 days and the 200 days.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was to provide the average and then the min and max outliers.
So we started doing member surveys about a year and a half, 2 years ago, to see what areas we can improve on. We started with our pre-retirement workshops, since we have kind of a captive audience of people here, and we can get them to fill them out while they're sitting in the room listening to the presentation. We found that for all of those surveys, the average score was 4.5 out of 5. So it's a 1 to 5 scale. We have multiple questions on there, and we provide a section for them to provide comments back to us. Some of the general comments that were negative for a while related to the building and the construction. Some of them were related to, they thought that it was going to be a one-on-one counseling appointment, but in a group setting, not necessarily like a classroom style. So we changed the name. At that time, it was called group counseling. So we changed it based on those comments that we received on the survey to pre-retirement workshop to try and help communicate to the members a little bit more about what the expectation is when they come to the session. So we've gotten some of those comments that we've been able to use. We've updated the PowerPoints based on those comments, and the surveys have been very helpful in that area. We also, as Tim mentioned, do informational sessions where we go out to different employers, their departments. Those have really been driven by the employer requesting us to come on site and provide that information to their employees. Starting this year, we're going to start having some of those sessions on site here, so anybody can sign up through CICERA to come to them. And those surveys have been very good. It's 4.7 out of 5. And because of that really good response, that's why we're trying to do a lot more of those sessions, including having it on site.
And it was 4.9, not 4.7.
For the informational sessions, the in-office survey, so that's
info sessions. Yeah.
So then we do have a third survey, which are the in-office surveys. That's when members are coming in and meeting individually with a counselor. They may be going through their estimate, or they're going through a retirement application in the retirement process, and so they're spending time in those counseling rooms that we have over by your mailboxes for around an hour, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter, depending on the questions they have. And then we have surveys for them to complete, and those have been very favorable at 4.9. So we can definitely tell that the members appreciate more of the in-person contact, and that was another reason for us to try and increase the amount of informational sessions we have. We have started advertising all of our informational sessions, our pre-retirement workshops. Another session we do, as Tim mentioned, that our member services group does is meetings with the employer and like their payroll staff, their HR staff. We've started advertising that more to our employers through a new employer newsletter that we started, and trying to get the word out that we have these, and let us know if you want one. We're always willing to come out to their sites and do them. So, and are there any questions? Yeah.
So in the transition from being employed to retired, when does the payment period begin for pensions, aside from the calculations and figuring it out? So if someone retires on a Friday, that's for them the last day of the month, and Monday is the first day of the month for the next month. Is it considered that, okay, they're employed and then retired, and then they're supposed to receive pension checks into retirement? The reason why I'm asking this is because depending on how long it takes to generate a pension check, if it takes 4 months and that's 4 months without pension income, is that then, are they supposed to be receiving something the month after they retire, so that when they get that first pension check, it's a kind of a big lump sum of, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, for it, I think it was on 14, on the slide 14. So if somebody retires on March 30th, or their last day worked is March 30th, their retirement date is March 31st, that is when their benefit begins. The first, and then when they're paid, they receive a retro, their initial payment is a retroactive, so it would be one day of March,
okay,
all of April, and say all of May.
And then a regular.
And then they'll go on the regular process for the first of the month.
Okay. So none of that is lost in
no,
the process.
Not okay. at all.
And some people try to strategize and wait to retire in late March so that they feel like they're going to be able to get the new COLA after.
Right.
But is that more myth than I mean, because it's if you're trying to figure out when does someone actually retire and then when do they get their benefit and so forth, it just seems like that's kind of a not such a great strategy.
I mean, the highest volume of retirement applications coming in, I'm going to say year over year, is February and March is when the applications are received, and they're going to have a retirement date. They will be retired March 31st or earlier to receive the cost of living adjustment.
Okay.
So their benefit is automatically higher within a couple days of retiring.
Okay.
Yeah, for example, the 1 day of March, and then when we do the April calculation, you know, based upon the cost of living, it will be higher.
Okay. And then also normal working hours, you said that's determined per the MOU?
Yes.
Because when you have monthly or safety employees or so forth, they're 24/7 service, normal working hours is 24 hours a day, right? So.
The MOUs normally, and again, I normally will, when they talk about working hours and schedule, talks, they, in some cases I'm familiar with, like the physicians, they say this is the schedules, and I believe, you know, they'll have three or four schedules that are mentioned in the MOU.
Okay.
That mentions what the hours are.
Okay.
Rusty, did you have something?
Oh, okay. Any other questions for staff? Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.